your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love
and
you.
And you know that
I really do.
Hello. You're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Debra Wolf, as you know. And today I have a special treat. I have been allowed to book my own guests for the next forever, really. So I'm going to get to bring to you, my All Paws Pet Talk listening audience, the real Smart Animal Talk, because I'm going to have smart guests on talking about smart things. And we're going to do it on a rotation so you get to know my guests. You'll become friends with them just like I am. You'll get to know their pets, their expertise, how they roll. And today, a familiar voice for you, for me, is Dusty Rainbolt. I've been talking to her for 15 years, maybe more. She blew my mind when she taught me how to read how a cat walks through a room to be able to tell if it's the bully or the victim. And some other stuff, too, she taught me that I never knew. After years of observing cats, she can make it so your cats know more tricks than your dogs. She can make it so your cats are impressive, happy, well-adjusted creatures, and there's no litter box accidents. So we're going to be talking with Dusty Rainbolt. She's vice president of AdoptAShelter.com, vice president of the Cat Writers Association, which is, I think, how I first met her. I'm also a member in Dog Writers Association as well. For me. And she's a member of the International Association of Animal Behavior Consultants. She's an author, many, many books, including one of my favorites, my favorite cat book on cat training ever, Cat Wrangling Made Easy, plus Kittens for Dummies, Ghost Cats, and, well, I'm sure she's working on some more. Welcome to the show, Dusty.
Oh, wow. What an introduction. Thank you so much.
Well,
I'm so happy to be here.
Cats all over the world are listening now. They're saying, who is this cat woman? She is impressive. And you are, Dusty. So welcome to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
Well, I just wanted to make one correction. I was vice president of Cat Writers, and when we lost our president, I was president, and now I am nothing. I have retired.
Okay. Do you know what? It's still in your byline. You gotta edit that one out.
I really do.
You're doing so much. I can't keep up. All right. So we've got Dusty Rainbolt. And a while back, you might remember, we had a caller who had some terrible problems with urinating. The cat was jumping up on the bed, and it was making a terrible mess on the bed. After 10 years of not letting anyone touch it, it got affectionate, but then it started to go to the bathroom in their room. So the lady took your advice, and she's emailed me that they've locked it out of that area. They've created more litter boxes. They took the lids off the litter boxes. She was skeptical about that, but you suggested maybe as the cat was getting older, it might have trouble getting in and out, or it might not see as well. So she did everything you said. She made all the litter boxes easier to get in and out of, no lids on them. And there's been no accidents. So she really, really wants to thank you, Dusty.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you. I'm glad she did it. And, you know, that's really important that people actually follow through and do what the behaviorist says. It doesn't work all the time. Nothing works 100% on every cat. But you got to start somewhere. And so I'm very, very proud of your listener for following through. And I know the cat is so much happier, too. So, yay. Give that lady a hand.
Yeah, it's really good when they do listen. And I think sometimes people will half-heartedly try, you know, change one litter box, but not all of them, or lock the cat out for a day or two and then just declare it's not working. And you really got to give it a good try. I mean, you could solve your problem. You may as well try it. But if you try something we suggest on the show and it doesn't work, that tells us a lot, too. Don't give up. Call us again, because Dusty's got more solutions for you. If that didn't work, we could throw something else your way. So I just, before we move on to some more general things about cats, Dusty, I just want to maybe highlight for the audience, I've had you on, you know, a decade or so, and we get callers all the time. And I'd say the most common problem we get is this litter box thing. So do you want to give them a Kittens for Dummies tape rundown on, you know, more litter boxes and cats, all that sort of stuff?
Sure, absolutely. And pardon the pun, but litter boxes is the number one cause of death in healthy cats, because people can't tolerate animals that are peeing or pooping all over the house. And, you know, after a time, they they wind up at the pound or they're thrown out of the house or whatever. And so consequently, whether directly or indirectly, it is the cause of death in many, many, many cats. So it's something that needs to be addressed. And the earlier you address it, the better, because cats are so much like people, it's scary. It takes 21 days to make a habit, and I think bad habits probably happen quicker. So if you have a cat and you're wanting to change a behavior and you can stop the behavior for 21 days, Dr. Nick Dodman, the head of the Tufts Feline Behavior Clinic, says that 21 days is usually the cutoff to the new, you know, to acquiring new behaviors.
Well, and that's what that lady did. She shut that cat out of her bedroom for over a month to break that habit. And that's not, most people won't stick it out that long. You're right.
Yep. But, you know, it's like people. I mean, if you bite your nails or you know, whatever, if you can do it for 21 days, I mean, do without it for 21 days, there's a good chance that you're going to break that habit, too. And the other thing is, if you have a cat that is peeing outside the box, you need to, first thing, take the cat to the vet, because many, many, many times it's going to be a behavior problem. And if it is, it's going to be a medical issue.
And sometimes it's easy to fix, right? 5 days, 10 days of antibiotics, and the cat never has the problem again. And you've been scolding it and punishing it or whatever, hating it, disliking it, treating it differently, just because it needed a little help from the vet. It had a bladder infection or crystals in the urine or something that cats get sometimes, right?
Well, yes, but on the other hand, there's this sticky little situation called interstitial cystitis. And that means we don't know what causes it. And it is a true condition. It's a syndrome. But a lot of times it's caused by stress. But it's a real illness, because for the people in your audience who have had cystitis, it's not a fun thing. I've had it before, and oh, my goodness. I mean, you know, I understand why the cat wants to pee every place but the box. But,
right.
Okay,
well, we're coming to a break, Dusty. You're going to be on for the next segment. So we're going to continue with this pee-pee, poo-poo, litter box talk. Lord knows, there's a lot of people out there just wishing their cat would get it right. And I am going to ask you, how is it possible that your cats know more tricks than your dogs? I know you believe cats are smarter than dogs, but I think I need to come visit your dog. Your dog is letting down the team here. She is. Now, please, is she like, I'm trying to remember, is she a Whippet? Is that right?
No, she's a Chinese Crested Terrier mix.
Terrier? Terriers are trick dogs. She should be, she should be outperforming that cat. All right, well, when we get back, we'll find out just how many cat tricks your cats know, Dusty. And for everybody listening who has a cat who won't do any tricks, we're going to teach you how today. Stay tuned on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
And anytime you're near, I love you.
Treat your furry best friend with a Clear Conscience. Clear Conscience Pet, that is. Everything made by this family-owned company is artisan crafted in the USA. From family-farmed ingredient sources, holistically formulated for your pet's best health. And just plain delicious. Their treats, chews, and the amazing super gravy food topper for dogs and cats are simply the best you can buy. And the company has won 5 National Nutrition Awards to prove it. Now, Clear Conscience Pet is launching the Sliders brand, a true breakthrough in meaty treats featuring the purest tender meat treat ever made. No grain, no gluten, no glycerin or other chemicals found in typical moist treats. Sliders are pub fun snacks made from lean meats nutritionally optimized with omega-rich organic flax and veggies. At clearconsciencepet.com. Your pets will love you for it.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. Purr Spray Pet, all natural, non-toxic spray for all of your pet problems. proven safe to use for their skin, eyes, and ears. Helps calm and heal wounds, hot spots, insect bites, and lots more. Will not sting, and very safe to use, even for your feathered friends. To find out how you can keep your pets happy and healthy, go to purrspraypet.com. That's purrspraypet.com. purrspraypet.com. Or call us now at 386-310-3924. Back on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deborah Wolf, and I'm kind of reluctant to say hello like that and scare away all the kitties, make them pee all over the place if they have that condition, Dusty. What are you talking about? Cats get stressed and they just pee everywhere? Really?
Well, as a matter of fact, yes. What happens is kitties that are stressed develop something called interstitial cystitis, and it's actually blood in the urine. It's an irritation of the lining of the bladder, and the way you treat that after you have ruled out any other medical causes, you play with your cat. You give your cat interesting things to do. You make them hunt for their food. You make them do food puzzles, and that helps relieve stress. And when exercising, getting your cat out and playing real hard, so he's getting exercise, because exercise creates releases serotonins, and serotonins, which is the active ingredient in Prozac, create a feeling of well-being. So, you know,
Them are just ignored, like, you know, ornaments, right? Like household knickknacks. Most cats aren't getting enough, are they?
I think that that's probably true, but even cats who have attentive owners the families may work and there's nothing to do during the day and they're inside cats and they're supposed to be out chasing prey and running and climbing trees. And so you need to have places where the cats can climb up, and you need to have good scratching places, and you need to have toys that are interesting, and you need twice a day to play with your cat and get him to run and jump and do exercises. And you do that with the, like, feather toys or laser pointers.
Okay, so now we're getting into the training and the tricks. And
yes.
Can you just give me a little bit of an idea? What are we talking here? I mean, I'm guessing your cat comes, sits, holds up a paw. Is there more?
Yes. Nixie would sit on command, come, sit on command, stay, sit up, high five, speak. And I think she did something else.
Speak, huh? So when you say speak, she says meow, meow, meow? Really?
She does, yeah.
I don't have to go meow, because I can get almost any cat to meow back at me. It's a little bit cheating, right? Speak, meow, and then they go meow.
No, this was on command.
Nice.
Was on command, yeah.
But, you know, if that's how it works for you, if your cat does meow when you meow at it, all you got to do is use the word speak before and after you do it and gradually phase out the word meow and it'll start responding. Okay, so Dusty, for those of us like me who do not have cats who do multiple tricks, and I'm betting you have some more impressive ones out there because Nixie's only one of your cats, right?
Right.
Can we work on one today? Can you pick a trick that people out there can teach their cat that will be kind of impressive?
Well, I tell you what, the first one I like is sit, and it's just really easy. Now, I prefer clicker training, but most people, clicker training is kind of touchy because you have to get the click just in the right place. So we're going to go another direction today, and you find a high-value treat. So, I mean, not just the stuff you buy at the store. My cats will give me up for baby food, turkey baby food, or deli turkey. Now, whenever you buy a treat, make sure it does not contain garlic, because garlic causes Heinz hemolytic anemia, and you don't want to go there. But so I like Gerber baby food because it doesn't contain onion or garlic. And you just put a little on your finger and put it above the cat's head and then pull back. So they're following your finger with their eyes, and eventually they're going to have to sit down so that they can keep watching it. And then as soon as the little bottom hits the floor, you say, good sit, and you let him have a lick or give him a little piece of meat.
Okay, and it doesn't have to be baby food. You could, if your cat is crazy for some kind of treat you're already giving it, just stop giving it for free and start giving it when you're training, right?
Do it before dinner. Exactly. Do it before dinner. And it also helps if you're not free feeding your cat. I mean, if you have food down all the time, then there's really no excitement about it. But also, let me tell you that the processed treats that are, you know, like little chunks and bits of stuff, there's the problem with that is that it only takes three or four pieces to fill them up. So they're not inspired to do it for very long. And that's
what about something we would eat? Like, sometimes I notice my cats, if I eat smoked salmon, they're there. If I'm, you know, making salmon sandwiches for the kids, anything with fish, they're quite interested. So
exactly.
Would skin be something you could use?
Is what?
Like the skin of the fish or the skin of the chicken?
Oh, sure,
or something like
sure. Again,
yeah, it would.
No garlic, no onions. Mm-hmm. But and also only do like the size of a pea or an eraser. Pencil head eraser, because it doesn't take much to fill them up. One of my favorite treats is bonito flakes. It's a kitty caviar, and kitty is with a K, and caviar is with a K, and it's just like eating flavored air, and it doesn't fill them up, so you can keep at it a while. The other thing you have to do is kitties do have a short attention span, so when they're ready to walk off, you just go, Good job. That's my notice.
See, now that's important because some dogs you can repeat all day. You know, there's some dogs who are quite interested in training and they want you to keep going. Golden Retrievers, Labrador Retrievers, they've got a really long attention span. A cat, it's like a nanosecond, right? Three times and they're done. They're like, look, I showed you I can do this. Now what have you got for me? Show me a new trick or I'm walking away, right?
Right, and when they do walk away, just, you know, try to get them to do something so you end it on a good note, something that they know really, really well. And after you've done that, then leave them alone. Because if you make it unpleasant, they're not going to want to do it. If it's fun, you want to do it. The other thing that's easy is once you have them sitting, then you just tap the bottom of the paw, they pick up the paw, and you say, shake. You know, that shake was so easy, I couldn't believe it. My cat learned
really?
That in one session. Yep, shake was super easy.
Oh, interesting. You know, our engineer says his cat uses the toilet. Now, that's a heck of a trick, but that requires some training. We will talk about that on a future show. We only have a minute left in this segment. I'd like to ask you to join me for the next... Oh, no, the engineer, okay, the cat doesn't use the toilet for the bathroom. The cat just drinks out of it. Okay, not quite as impressive. Not as impressive, but still pretty good. Okay, so we're going to come back after the break, Dusty, because I know you were just at a big conference. And we haven't even had a chance to talk about that yet. So stay tuned, everybody. Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. If you've ever wondered what the true cat fanatics, the experts on cats, are doing with their time, stay tuned and you'll find out on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio with me, Deborah Wolf.
And anytime you're near.
Scratch it.
Is your itchy dog allergy sad? Did you know that our dogs suffer from the same pollen, dust mite, and mold allergies that we do? Now, veterinarian dermatologist Dr. Christian has formulated Doggy Goo. Doggy Goo is a peanut butter treat for your dog. But Doggy Goo also sublingually builds tolerance to 10 pollens, 2 mites, and 3 molds 100% naturally. Try Doggy Goo. Your dog will Doggy Goo lick it up. Call 855-246-2426. The number again is 855-246-2426 or on the web www.healthygoo.com. Goo, spelled G-O-O.
Scratch it.
Listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. I guess the cats are peeing all over the place out there in Radio Land. Well, hopefully not. Hopefully the cats can tell. I like them too. And Dusty's here with me, so that's gotta stand me well with the cat population. Look, I'm friends with Dusty, everybody. You gotta like me. Cats do learn by watching, even more so than dogs. And if you think about a dog, a border collie, watching its master or watching the herd, there's a lot of visual to and fro going on, but cats learn even more by watching. So when they see you being nice to another cat, they know what that is. And when they see you being mean to another cat, they know what that is too. Okay, so we're back with Dusty Rainbow. And I understand you are off with all these terrific cat people. I'm so jealous. I bet everybody had cat hair on their sweaters. Where'd you go?
Well, let's see. We were at Bark World and Meow World presented by Cat Writers Association in Atlanta. And let me getting back to what you just said about they learn by observation. I was working with Nixie, and we were going through our routine of shake, sit, and all that. And there was another cat who simply watched us, and he started offering me his hand when I said shake. It was amazing. So, yes, they do learn by observation.
You know what? I was, quite a long time ago, I made a DVD of dog training, and one of the things I did was I was trying to show in the DVD the different breeds and how they learn differently. And so I took a hula hoop, and I took four dogs that had never jumped through a hula hoop before, and right live on air I showed, you know, this is how you train a dog to jump through a hoop. Well, the last one to go was my standard poodle, who was then a puppy. And he was watching this whole thing. And I swear, he was just like, he just walked up and did it. Like, no train. And the point I was trying to make was that some dogs are really, really smart and you hardly have to train them. And he was last to show that point. And he just walked in and did it. Like, oh, is this what you want? So, yeah, some dogs do learn by watching. There are other dogs, it's really hard to get their attention. You know, some were bred for looks, not so much for function, and they're not really paying attention, or their function has nothing to do with you. It's go find the rabbit and kill it. Don't pay attention to the person. So sometimes you get into troubles like that, but with cats, we don't have that, do we? Like, they weren't really bred the same way for specific uses, right? Mm-hmm. So pretty much any cat can do this, can't it?
I think so. Of course, it's better when you start out younger, but older cats can still learn. So don't give up. Just because you have an 8-year-old cat doesn't mean that he can't learn tricks. That just means that you have to use very high-value treats, and you have to be patient. Nixie learned how to sit, which was her first trick, and she did that in 2 5-minute sessions. My terrier Chinese crested mix took 3 months. So.
Well, I'm not sure that says something about the dog. I think that says something about you. How motivated were you with this dog?
Oh, actually pretty motivated, but she was 5 years old when I got her, and I think since then we've learned quite a bit, but I don't think anybody had ever taught her anything.
And that's a good point to make. If your cat's never been taught anything, it's not even used to listening to you or paying attention or thinking there's a give and take. Mm-hmm. It's kind of given up on you, thinking you're just not going to communicate. So it's kind of an eye-opener for it. The first trick may take a while, but once it learns that this is going back and forth, your cat, your dog, it becomes engaged with the whole thing. It's like, oh, really? This matters? This is fun? Okay, I'll play this game with you. And really, learning tricks is... it's just about them proving they understood you. It's kind of a show-off mm-hmm. game for them, and they like it.
They do. But getting back to Cat Writers, it was wonderful. We learned a lot about writing. We learned a lot about publishing. We learned a lot about cats, and it was wonderful. So if there's anybody out there that is interested in writing, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, look us up at catwriters.com. We're a wonderful nurturing organization, and I owe my entire publishing career to having joined it 22 years ago.
Really? Oh, that's interesting that you would say that, because I just think of you as one of the pillars, you know, one of the key people to get to know if you can when you're there, and you're saying it's all because of that. I met, you know, not met in person, but met over the radio and other ways, some pretty incredible people, like Mordecai Siegel, and, you know, some people that I'm so glad I got to talk with about cats. Do you remember him?
Oh, I do remember. He was one of the founding members of Cat Writers. Yes, and the Dog Writers Association of America is kind of our big brother organization. We're patterned very much after them, even though they're, like, I believe about 70 years old, and Cat Writers is about 23.
Well, this show has actually won an award through Dog Writers Association of America with me. I guess I won the award with this show for Best Pet Radio in America. So Dog Writers Association of America is a longtime friend of All Paws Pet Talk Radio and me too. But and through it, I've met so many good people. So if you are interested in writing about dogs or cats, check it out. They do have different levels. There's professional memberships and associate memberships, and there's all kinds of, I mean, the websites are just full of interesting information and links to trusted sources, not the nonsense you sometimes get faced with. So for that alone, it's a good source. Okay, so Dusty, I think we're getting close to the end of our third segment here. Next time I have you on, is that two or three? I think we've done three. So next time I have you on, it'll be in about a month. And if anyone listening has any cat questions, Dusty's with us now every month for a little bit. So if you send me your cat questions to All Paws Pet Talk Radio, or you can send them to me at DeborahWolfOnline.com. Send me your cat questions, and we'll put our heads together and solve them for you. It can be anything, right, Dusty? Give us an example of the cat questions we can help people with.
Well, of course, the most common one is peeing outside of the box. But another one is, how do you stop them from scratching the furniture? How do you keep them from jumping on how do you stop them from scratching, and how do you get them to get along with each other? How do you introduce them to a dog? Those are the main ones I get.
Yes, and destruction, all sorts of destruction. Also aggression, where you get people getting ankles scratched, or they don't realize that they're overstimulating their cats. But what they think is the cat is Jekyll and Hyde. He's nice, and then he's mean. And people are getting hurt, so they want a solution, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? Most of the time, it's not the cat's fault. It's that the people don't understand what the cats have been telling them.
Yeah, the cat has clearly said, I've had enough, thank you, and the person keeps at it until the cat gets crazy stimulated, and I know what that's like. I've got scratches on one of my wrists right now because in August 1st, I adopted these two rescue cats that had to be milk-fed from bottles and all that, and I play too rough with them. I can't help it. They're adorable, so it's my fault. I know.
Yeah, you don't want to start those bad habits with those little babies, because that carries through to life. So we'll have to talk about that, too.
Oh, no. I'm going to get my comeuppance. Well, if anyone out there wants to see my kittens, I've got some pretty good footage up there on Camp Good Dog Facebook. Poor doggies had to move over and let the baby kittens have some room. Right now I'm looking out at the field, and I can see Pitbull Cross, Beagle Cross, Basset Cross, and an Australian Shepherd puppy. A good team, and they're all staring at my pygmy goats, of course. So that's day at Camp Good Dog. All right, so Dusty, I look forward to having you back in a month.
I'm looking forward to it.
All your cat travels and cat experiences. Everybody, send me your questions. Thank you so much, Dusty.
Thank you. Don't forget to go to DustyCatWriter.com to check out my blog.
Right on, DustyCatWriter.com, the Cat Wrangler's blog. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We'll have a veterinarian, Dr. Camphor, on to answer your medical problems coming up next on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
NuVet Plus, your pet's best friend. NuVet Plus is an immune system builder that is safe for all stages of your dog's life. helps eliminate most issues, including allergies, scratching and itching, hot spots, arthritis and joint issues, chronic ear infections, tear staining, lack of energy, digestive issues, and so much more. All natural, manufactured in an FDA-registered human pharmaceutical lab here in the USA, using ingredients sourced in the USA. Nothing artificial, no sugars, wheat, corn, or dyes. Never heat-treated to help retain all the natural, rich ingredients. Comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee and is only pennies a day. Call us Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. Pacific Time. 1-800-474-7044. That's 1-800-474-7044. And tell them you are referred by All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Or go online to www.nuvet.com. That's www.nuvet.com. Use order code 33955. Again, www.nuvet.com. Order code 3395. Put your pet on the path to good health.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deborah Wolf, and I'm calling in from Camp Good Dog, as you know, where it is definitely raining, but on the good side, the salmon are in the river. I saw 8 of them yesterday, big, pink, beautiful salmon, not sure what kind, but oh, they're more than a foot long, even the smallest ones. Amazing to see. So we've got Dr. Camphor calling in all the way from Florida, so there's no way he saw my salmon. But I know he's been off and about and going through some volunteer work with some local people there in animal services. And all around the world, we have the same problems with animals, not too many animals, and animals being killed, and animals not being adopted, and all this sort of stuff. So Dr. Camphor's been working hands-on with these problems, and we're going to find out today what's going on with that? Because it's been said that there's really no reason we have kill shelters anymore. I want to know, is it possible? Can we get rid of the killing? Welcome to the show, Dr. Camphor.
Oh, glad to have you. Glad to be here with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so you've been out doing some volunteer work. Thank you on behalf of the animals you've been helping. What have you learned lately? What's new in the animal services area?
Well, I've been spent most of the morning in a meeting with one of our local counties here. They're essentially revamping their entire animal services, and I'm part of the Citizens Advisory Committee that helps them do that, the only veterinarian serving on the committee, so they value my input. And it comes from a poor rural county, one of the poorer rural counties, less populated counties in our area, and of course they've had to deal with not only, you know, budget issues and staffing problems and lack of facilities and equipment, but also a lot of bad press. There's a lot of misconceptions, a lot of bad press that they've undeservedly received, and, you know, trying to overcome a lot of public relations issues. Previously, their animal control had been conducted by the local sheriff's department, and they sort of gave up on it and turned it back over to the county council, which is now civilianizing, if you will, you know, the new thing, and they're in the process of trying to set up a whole new shelter, you know, hire and train all new staff, or come up with some new programs, come up with a budget, trying to make the thing self-supporting. And so a lot of issues came up, which is, you know, relevant to just about any area, any municipality, any county, any state, because, you know, every place has to deal with these. There's virtually no place in the United States or Canada, I imagine, that doesn't have some sort of, you know, animal control service.
Well, and like you're saying, most of them have this kind of limbo. Like there is an SPCA sometimes, there is a nonprofit sometimes, sometimes there's a government-funded pound, local versus regional versus provincial versus, you know, there's all these different branches trying to do good, and then sometimes there's even a private authority that's got a contract to catch all the stray dogs, and sometimes there's unethical goings-on behind the scenes with animals being reportedly, at least, there's accusations, at least, of animals, pet animals, lost animals ending up in labs. And so, I mean, we've really got to get a handle on this, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and everybody strives. A lot of the killing shelters, you know, get a lot of bad press just because of the sheer numbers and types of animals that they need to put down. And, you know, there's always going to be a need to put some animals to sleep. And I guess the what came out today is, you know, the definition of a no-kill shelter is one that euthanizes less than 10% of the animals that come in. And, you know, there's always, no matter how desperately you try not to be a killing shelter, there's always going to be some animals that come in either because of their disastrous health conditions or age or, you know, pain and suffering, cancer, aggressiveness. There's always going to be some need to have to euthanize some animals. It's going to happen. But
yeah,
a no-kill shelter typically will...
There's an area
where
I have problems with, because on both ends of it, sometimes the dogs that are labeled aggressive are not. They're just not very good in caged environments, and so they sort of key up and bark.
That's right. And
sometimes.
Case in point was one that came into my office yesterday. One of our shelters here in the Daytona Beach area was going to put this dog to sleep because it was so aggressive. They couldn't even, you know, staff could get to it. They couldn't even examine it, do anything with it. And this one woman came and said, "I'll take the dog." And this was a dog that they couldn't even get up to do a heartworm check, a physical test, on anything. And she's had the dog for about a week now, bring the thing into my clinic, and it's walking on a leash. And yes, it was a little fearful, but we were able to examine it, do a heartworm test on it. The dog just needs to get out of that environment. And so,
yeah,
yes,
and there's
a lot of dogs who are labeled hopeless or not.
Up strangers, or, you know, and it's good protection behavior. It just doesn't suit getting adopted out of a kennel. But on the other hand, I do occasionally, it's usually with new volunteers, they get really sentimentally attached to a dog that is truly unadoptable, and they spend so much of their own time and money, and a lot of times it's just, it's hard to watch, because that time and money could be so much better spent on a few animals rather than the one that really is elderly, aggressive, ill. You know, the person probably turned it in because they knew it needed to be euthanized. So sometimes there's animals at the other end where having a strict 100% no-kill really isn't doing anybody any favors.
No, and it's not even really feasible. There's no shelter can be 100% no-kill. You know, what they'll end up doing is the animals that do need to be euthanized is they will transfer them to someone else, or
exactly.
They, one way or
move
another,
it along.
They will take them somewhere else to have the deed done so they can maintain their status as a no-kill. And like you said, you're not doing the animals any service. When it's necessary, it's necessary.
Yeah, so what about, now there's a big protest in Vancouver coming up next November 12th at noon at City Hall, and they're telling people, I'm kind of thinking of going, even though I have to find out first what it's about, because it looks like it's going to be just great fun. They say, bring your dogs, bring your guitars, bring your drums, cats and cameras are welcome. I just want to go there to see this happening. But on the other hand, I think what they may be protesting from the photograph, and I've yet to get to the bottom of this, it might be dogs tied up. And the picture they're showing is a Shiba Inu tied, or maybe a Husky Cross, hard to say, tied on a leash outside a front door. It's in its yard. It doesn't look terribly neglected or unhappy. I'm not clear where the injustice is here. But there are people who are adamantly against what they call chained dogs. And I am too when it comes to dogs who are chained 24/7 and never walked and never inside, never with the family, you know, left alone and fed once a day, and basically they're guard dogs. That, yeah, that's terrible. But there's this middle ground, you know? And I don't know where to stand on that. So Dr. Camphor, we are running out of time with this segment. We're going to come back from the break and talk about more about what this what your organization's going to do about this. Where do they stand on, you know, these types of things, the chain dogs, the abused dogs, the rescue dogs, the hoarding, which is a hot issue, because I guess you're going to have to come up with some solutions for all of that. And in the meantime, if anyone wants to call this show, we do have Dr. Camphor here, so you can call and ask us 1-888-627-6008. Ask any medical, dog, cat, bird, whatever problem you've got. 1-888-627-6008. You will get free veterinary advice right here, right now. It's Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
And anytime you're near.
For your dogs, running beside your bike is more rewarding canine exercise than any walk. It's also more dangerous. Until now. Introducing the amazingly stable Bike Toe Leash, the only safe dog biking attachment approved by the American Pet Association. The Bike Toe Leash installs in seconds on bikes, trikes, power chairs, and mobility scooters. No tools needed, and dogs learn it immediately. With a Bike Toe Leash, both dogs and rider can enjoy fun recreation anywhere, no matter what your ability level. To learn more and order your Bike Toe Leash, visit BikeToeLeash.com. That's BikeToeLeash.com. Bike toe leashes are made in the USA and ship worldwide. That website again is BikeToeLeash.com.
Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, your host, Deborah Wolf. And I'm here with Dr. Don Canfer, as y'all know. So you can call the show and ask him your questions if you like. We only have a segment left. You better call soon. Dr. Don, you've been working with the locals, the animal services in your area of Florida to try and solve some of these terrible problems we're all faced with. So what are some of the things you've figured out? What's going on over there that we can all maybe take a page out of your book?
Okay. Well, we haven't figured a lot of things. We're still in the process of experimenting with things. But earlier we were talking about tethering, and that is kind of a sore point because it is, as I mentioned earlier, you know, a rural area. It's not a wealthy area. And a lot of people, by necessity, tether their dogs because there's no other way to keep them out of the road or keep them on the property. They, you know, fencing is non-existent in a lot of places, and where it does exist, it's not sufficient. And there brings up pros and cons. Most municipalities have some sort of tethering ordinance or some sort of criteria mentioned, you know, minimum, you know, shade, a minimum length for tethering, maximum time the dogs can be kept tethered, availability of shade, you know, food, water, shelter, that sort of thing. And, you know, tethering in and of itself is not a bad thing for the dogs, again, as long as they have sufficient room to roam, as long as they're released from the tether, you know, and allowed to get some exercise and other manners and, you know, interaction with other people and other animals, and they've got access to food and water and shelter, you know, the tethering in and of itself is not terribly bad. It's, as you've mentioned earlier, when people keep these dogs tied up on a short tether in a yard with no distractions and for days and weeks at a time, and that amounts to animal cruelty.
Yeah, you know, on this topic, I have a recent client I just met. It's a blue heeler named Blue. Lovely. And the owner, you know, I'd been driving by the house quite a lot over the years and noticed that this herding dog was often tied up, and there were these goats and sheep that I kind of thought, well, why doesn't he get the dog to mind the goats and sheep? Well, I finally met the guy, and it turns out the dog's great at minding the goats and sheep, but it won't stop. It's got no off switch. So I'm going to help him with that. I'm going to teach the dog to stop on command. But in the meantime, he does tie it up so it won't just keep on herding all day long, right? Run those animals ragged. Now, this dog is allowed, it's got a nice doghouse, it's got water, it's got food. The tether's actually right at the front door. So it's not that it's lonely. It's not that it never gets to do what it's meant to do. The opposite. This dog has a blissful life, you know? Whereas what the organizations that are going for these tethering rules are trying to stop is that dog that's just tied outside all the time barking. Gets fed once a day and that's it. Lives and dies in that one spot, sometimes with a collar that doesn't fit, sometimes tangled, sometimes needing vet care. You know, cold, rain, heat, water might evaporate, water might freeze, and there the dog is, barking, barking, barking. That's what they're trying to stop. So we really have to be careful about the two things. They're not necessarily the same. And I've even seen dogs tethered so they can be greeters, you know, where the dog is at a store or a business, and he's in and out greeting all the people, but they don't want someone to just mistake him for a stray and take off with him. You know, there's some situations which are actually, really, the dog is spoiled even though he's tethered. He's got a decadent life. So I think we got to be careful when we judge other people. And I'm sure you're finding that with this organization, that people are a little bit or can be very emotionally on a certain side. And sometimes it can be pretty tense there. Are you finding that?
Well, there's unfortunately the politics enter into it because this is, you know, a governmental animal control agency, and yeah, that has to respond to the politicians, and the politicians have to be responsive to the people that vote for them, and you can't tick everybody off because that doesn't get you reelected. So yeah, there's a delicate balance that has to be walked there, and we've been debating this issue back and forth, and nothing yet has concrete has been has come out of it. We don't have an ordinance etched in stone. There are model ordinances that can be adapted or adopted, that are already existing. There are many municipalities have already worked out the details of this. A lot of them have already passed the legal stages. You know, they've already been tried and tested in the courts as far as what will work and what won't. So it's just a question of tweaking these things according to local customs and local needs. So it'll all get worked out. But we're right now in a transition period here with this one county that I work in, trying to get their animal services up and functioning again. And it's not an easy matter because, like I said, there's budget constraints and personnel constraints and physical plant constraints. And you mentioned earlier, about private groups. And one of the things we've found is that in trying to search for sources of revenue, because adoption fees in a rural, lowly populated county are not going to generate enough funds to keep animal services functioning. And so we rely a lot on donations and trying to get vaccines donated and food donated and things that you need donated. A lot of these corporations will not donate to a government-run animal control. They figure government has deep enough pockets, but they will to 501c3 nonprofits. And so that's an avenue we're pursuing now, is setting up sort of a Friends of the Animal Control, kind of like your Friends of the Library groups that pop up here
and
there.
Great idea.
Libraries.
That's a great idea, because there are times when the privates get so much of one type of donation. They get a ton of blankets, but mm-hmm. they didn't get any soap that week, or they didn't get any dog food that week, so you may be able to trade.
Well, what we're really looking for is to be able to get private donations from corporations, pharmaceutical companies to donate vaccines, donate drugs, things like Maddie's Fund to be able to donate operating expenses.
I don't know about in America, but up in Canada, you'd have a hard time with that because of the tax receipt situation. That's why the nonprofits get.
And that's why we need the private 501. I guess, in Canada, you've got a different 501c3 refers to our tax code, or the section of our tax code that allows nonprofit corporations to exist and solicit donations, for which the people who give the donations get a tax credit for it. So we're in the process of trying to set up a sort of a Friends of the Animals thing to work hand in hand with the government animal control, but they would be sort of our private arm that would be in charge of, getting donations and then donating them to the county-run shelter.
Well, all of you out there, if you've ever sat in your veterinary office and you've thought, these guys charge too much, keep in mind that almost every vet I've ever met does volunteer work, is spaying and neutering and doing stressful surgeries and working and going to these meetings and not getting paid. So they're in it for the animals too. Okay, so Dr. Camper, we do have a question for you today. It's kind of an odd question. This person said that their kid had strep, and they're wondering, the question got broader and broader. Could their child have given a strep throat infection to their cat or their dog? And then the question became, I know worms go back and forth. What about other diseases? What about STDs? What about, and he just names off all these things he's worried that, his family's had in the last few years. How do you know if your pets will reinfect you or carry something, or when should you be treating them too, is his question. They don't show symptoms, but is it possible that you just keep exchanging something back and forth?
There are diseases. These are called zoonoses or zoonotic diseases. And yes, there are some diseases you can give to your animals, and there are diseases that your animals can give to you. There are infectious diseases like some bacterial or viral infections. And there are parasitic infections such as, hookworms and roundworms and some other parasites that can share, you know, people and animals. So, yeah, some you can, some you can't. The strep throat I would discount. There was this very recently, just but about 10 days ago, we here in Florida got a message from our state veterinary association about Ebola virus. And they sent all the veterinarians via email a poster that we could print out and put in our offices, which I have, outlining the risks of Ebola in your pet. As some of our listeners may remember, that nurse then came back from Africa in Spain that got Ebola and was quarantined. They euthanized her dog.
Yes, but in Texas, they did a similar situation. They kept the dog alive. So we only have 1 minute. I'm sorry to say, Dr. Camper.
We'll get back to the question after the break. But the short answer is the strep probably has nothing to do with her pet. But the long answer is yes. Everything from Ebola to, you know, certain strains of other diseases. Yes, there are diseases you can share with your animal. And that's a good subject we can touch on after the break.
Well, we're going to have Dr. Camphor come back because we've run out of time on today's Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. But I'll be back next week, Deborah Wolf, you know me. And I'll be back with one of my favorite guests and one of my favorite veterinarians, because that's what I'm going to be doing from now on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Until then, be good to your animals.
Your doggy.
I'm your doggy.